be a protester. Let me see a permit. You don't need a permit? What do you mean? What's that? Against the war in Vietnam? Let me tell you something, son. You ever been in Vietnam? Well, I have, and I know what it's like. Oh, yeah, you know, huh? What are you, 2 years old? You've been in the Army? You haven't been in the Army, high school? What? What'd you say, young lady? Make love, not war? Listen, I make love very well. What do you know about love? What do you know about war? Well, I got a little slut in the face, huh? You don't even wear a goddamn brassiere, you little slut, goddamn bitch. What? What'd you say? What are you gonna do about it? Listen, son, I happen to know that you don't have a permit here, so I'm gonna tell you something. You just touch my bat? You touch my bat? Come on, let me out! Give me it!
Junk food supper.
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 Welcome to Junk Food Supper. This is the mostly weekly podcast where we get together to talk about the weird, wild, crazy cinematic goings on in the world of today and yesterday, and even the world of tomorrow. I am Parker, joined as always by Sean Byron in LA. How are you, Sean Byron?
I'm doing all right, although I feel woefully unprepared to discuss the cult movies of tomorrow. Should I prep something on that?
Yeah. I mean, you were supposed to invent time travel and figure out what people are watching in the world of tomorrow. You didn't do that? I thought you were going to do that.
Well, I do have this crystal orb, but it's, I don't know, it's in a closet somewhere, and I don't even know, it's under some comic book boxes. I probably can't even get to it during the show.
Well, I also like to ponder orbs. I might have an orb somewhere, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah, if by the end of this episode we don't do a little bit of orb gazing, I think we messed up.
I think that's true. We got to find out what the kids in 2065 are watching.
Yeah, if they're watching.
Yeah, they're probably just watching TikTok version 8.0.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, humanity has moved on to, I don't know, smell-based entertainment. One of the other senses, you know? They're not watching nothing. They're just sniffing these entertainments.
That would be cool. We got so close to that in the 80s with scratch and sniff, and then it all fell apart.
I know. What a shame.
Unfortunate. But while we're still here like cavemen watching things with our eyeballs, have you watched anything cool this week or done anything cool?
Absolutely nothing. If you can believe it. You know, I talked a big game last week about Halloween celebrations will continue. You know, I made a big grandstand about I'm going to be the king of Halloween this early November. Turns out it was mostly all talk.
Yeah. Me too. I didn't even watch that Treehouse of Horror that I made such a big deal about last week.
Yeah. I believe that you called it one of the cornerstones of American society.
I did. It's, I mean, you can really set your watch to it, you know? It's like, it's that reliable in terms of American culture. But
I think you described it as a foundational text for your own being.
Mm-hmm. I did. And then I continued my 23-year-long streak of not watching a new Treehouse of Horror. I really
well, you got to keep that alive, you know, preserve that at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I thought about watching Halloween stuff this weekend, and maybe that is the victory. You know, maybe the victory here is that I kept Halloween in my heart. Whether or not I acted on it, you know, I guess, who cares?
Yeah, I think that that's what's important. You know, just as long as you're thinking about it, it's the thought that counts.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I was, you know, the spirit was with me.
Well, I did see some stuff that wasn't Halloween-y whatsoever.
Okay, you know what? On this episode, I'll allow it.
I saw that new Martin Scorsese film. Oh. Have you heard about this guy?
Oh, you're talking about the one where he's a cartoon fish?
You thinking about Mr. Limpet? The Don Knotts movie?
I'm always thinking about Mr. Limpet.
I saw this The Killers of the Flower Moon. I finally braved it, even though it's like almost 4 hours long. And it was pretty good. I'm glad I saw it in the theater, because if I had seen it on at home on Apple Plus or Apple TV or whatever the hell it's called, probably would not have liked it as much if I was like getting up and peeing and taking the dogs out and pausing and everything like this, because it's a slow movie. It's a, you know, you got to be watching it in a theater with your eyeballs, I think. Have you seen this? Do you care about Martin Scorsese enough to go out and see this? I know you're not really a theater man these days.
I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I've been burned a few times now, and I really disliked The Irishman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if that weren't the case, I probably would have been lined up to see this, and maybe it's my mistake. Maybe I'm going to regret it, but I don't know. I feel like dude's kind of fallen off, and the prospect of spending 3+ hours in the theater didn't seem that enticing, but people love it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, The Irishman is another thing that kept me from going opening day. Yeah, people loved The Irishman too, which is another thing that kept me away from this, because I was like, oh, everybody loves Killers of the Flower Moon, but everybody loved The Irishman, so I don't know. But yeah, people love this. I love this. This is a good one. This is not The Irishman. There's no weird de-aging Robert De Niro. He plays a normal-ass old man in this.
Okay. All right. I like that. Now, for a director who supposedly hates video games so much, anybody ever tell Marty that the title of his new flick sounds like a game I would download off Steam?
Yeah, it does.
Some kind of indie, you know, like romance RPG or something that is primarily geared towards a Japanese audience.
It does sound sort of like a walking simulator. You know, you're walking through the fields.
I know how you love those. Yeah,
I do. Yeah. Also, for a guy who hates Marvel movies, his new movie made about 1/16th of what your average Marvel movie makes. So, in your face, Martin Scorsese. Ant-Man is the true champion of cinema. Mm-hmm. In your face.
I don't know why he even tries anymore.
He's got to give it up. I mean, unless he's going to make, you know, like if he's going to do Goodfellas 2, where Goodfellas fight Spider-Man, like that's really all he can do at this point.
Yeah. Well, the opportunity is there. It sounds like we've got a guy who's willing to at least pitch on it, you know, if not write the entire mm-hmm. script.
I can do it. But yeah, this is a really good movie. I was surprised at how good it was. And John Lithgow is in it. A Brian De Palma man is.
Oh, yes.
So it ties in. That's the connection to this week's movie, Hi, Mom. Is John Lithgow has worked with Brian De Palma. There's no other connections between Killers of the Flower Moon and Hi, Mom that we'll be exploring.
Well, I think one is enough.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely not connected to Halloween, which we've established now. It's long gone. If you're still talking about Halloween now, you're a fool.
Yeah. It is November 7th when we're recording this. The first weekend of November is long gone. Halloween's done. Put it away, people. Until September 1st. That's the right time.
I mean, it was cute. It was debatably even adorable. But it's time to move on.
It was adorable.
Well, speaking of moving on, I don't know if we could perhaps maybe move on into our first segment.
Oh, yeah, we could do that. We could do that for sure.
I think we have a segment lined up this week that might appeal to some of the listeners, hopefully. Over on the Junk Food Suppers, we've been doing those Bookhouse Boys, where we review the Twin Peaks show. And we talk a lot of game, at least I talk a lot of game, about Twin Peaks compared to the other shows that were airing at the time. Now, in actuality, am I an expert on what was airing on television in 1990? No, I'm full of shit. I'm just talking out my ass when I make these claims. So I figured we could rectify that. And hopefully do so in a way that's a little bit entertaining by watching one of those videos where YouTube user RWDT09 compiles a whole bunch of TV intros into one video. How's that sound?
Yeah, we've done this a few times. I really like this. It's fun to see how many TV shows from yesteryear that I do not remember whatsoever, even though like the age of 10, I was glued to the TV 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
It's just, and I mean, some of, you know, most of these shows that we see on these things are just gone forever. Like they're not, getting put out on, they're not on streaming, they're not on DVD, they're never going to be put out on DVD. They're just kind of gone forever. So it's cool to see what we can of these shows.
Yeah, totally. And it is wild too to think, like, you know, when we were kids and glued to the TV, there wasn't that much media available. You know, fewer movies came out, there were fewer TV shows, and yet we still missed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what a wild time when you had only 60 TV channels. What a world.
Yeah, I know. We were like cavemen, you know, just rubbing sticks together. Mm-hmm. This is back before you could even sniff your television, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think let's kick it off then. So the video that we're going to be looking at, if you search on YouTube, it is entitled 34 New Shows of Fall TV 1990. It's about 34 minutes long. Like I said, uploaded by YouTube user RWDT09. And if there's no further questions, concerns, I think let's just get right into it, right?
Yeah. Well, I do have a question. Are we going to do 1, 2, 3, push the button on 3, or 1, 2, 3, beat, and then push the button?
I say let's push it on the 3.
All right. That's perfect. That's what I like.
All right. So let's see what was competing with Twin Peaks, which I guess Twin Peaks debuted in spring 1990 and its second season debuted in fall 1990, a quick turnaround there. So this would have been the shows that came up against its second season. But with no further ado, on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Perfect. Also, it should be stated that we're concerned about Twin Peaks because we do a podcast called The Bookhouse Boys, which reviews and recaps all of Twin Peaks over on the Patreon, patreon.com/junkfooddinner.
Oh, yeah, we must say that. So we got a little blurb there saying that basically two shows are missing their intros here, Fox's DEA and some other one. But the first show that we're looking at now is The Flash, it looks like, the 1990 live-action Flash TV show that I've always been curious about. I kind of just missed this when it aired. I think it kind of came and went pretty quickly, and I was maybe slightly too young to have caught it in time, but I liked the Flash comics when I was young, you know?
Yeah. I wasn't too much of a superhero man. I mean, outside of, I guess, Batman because of the Burton movies when I was a kid. So this wasn't really on my radar, but I've been wanting to go back to it. It's very like Tim Burton-y. I mean, as we can see, it's like, looks like
it's got Danny Elfman music, right?
Yeah. Or at least fake Danny Elfman music.
I think it is Elfman. I think he actually did the music.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I think this looks fun.
Yeah.
Like this suit is kind of cool. I don't know. It looks goofy, but fun.
Yeah. I think Mark Hamill was like one of the bad guys, and Corinne Borer from Joysticks was one of the bad guys. Like, it seems like a lot of like cool people pop up on it.
All right. We've moved into a new promo for Earth Force. What the hell is Earth Force?
I have never heard of it, but this Starring is very...
Gil Gerard?
Yeah. This looks, oh, that's the guy from just one of the guys, Clayton Rohner. Okay. He's like the friend.
Yeah. Who could forget Tiffany Lamb? Yeah. It looks like maybe a Fantasy Island sort of a thing, maybe like a higher budget kind of globe-trotting action type of a movie. I don't know. Or not movie, but show.
Yeah. It the way that this is set up, it looks like a parody. Like a Tim and Eric, like what Tim and Eric would do if they were doing like a fake 90s TV show.
Yeah. I mean, I think we might have that feeling for a lot of these, you know?
True. Oh, this is a classic. What do we got here? Parker Lewis.
Is this Parker Lewis?
Yeah, this is Parker Lewis. One of the greatest shows of all time. A show that single-handedly made my name cool in third grade. It didn't really have credits though. So this is kind of odd. Like, the show was sort of ahead of its time in that it had like these kind of weird vignettes instead of credits. Also,
this was a show that I kind of skipped past, and maybe I should go back for it.
I was obsessed with it. I have the first season on DVD, which I'm excited about because it's crazy expensive and out of print now. And I don't have the second season, which pains me. But yeah, I loved it as a kid. I was obsessed with it. Tim Stack is in it, and he's always funny.
Who's this guy that looks like Ethan Suplee, kind of?
That's Kubiak.
Okay.
Yeah. After this, he was in he was on ER for a while, but mostly I think he's just known for being Kubiak. But,
all right, well.
Yeah.
Wow, oh, yeah. Also, a scene in a video store that looks cool.
Oh, yeah. Parker Lewis's parents own the video store, so there's tons of scenes in this video store.
Oh, that's probably, they own Mondo Video?
Yeah. So that's probably a great reason to go back and watch this. Just for the video store stuff.
It looks like Dave's Laserdisc on Ventura Boulevard, but it's probably just a set, I'm guessing.
I'm not sure.
All right, well, are you sure about Ferris Bueller's television adaptation starring Charlie Schlatter?
I am not. I've heard about this, but I haven't seen it. It seems...
It's going to be bad, right?
Yeah, it seems pretty awful.
Man, did you see that Alan Ruck video of him crashing into a pizza joint in Hollywood?
No, I did not.
Oh, you got to look it up. It's insane. I have no idea what happened, but he's stopped at a stoplight behind a car, and then suddenly he just rips out from behind this car, 50 miles an hour, drives through the wall of a pizza joint, hitting three cars in the process. And then the cops were like, we don't suspect any sort of intoxication. And they let him go. And I'm like, but what happened here? You were stopped at a light and, just suddenly start going 50 and crash into a wall.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was just doing a reference to that scene in Ferris Bueller where he crashes the car.
That's what people are saying. Yeah. Well, we see you, Alan Ruck, and get well, I guess.
Yeah. This is Will Smith. He slaps people because he can't take jokes.
Now, this is the Fresh Prince, right? I think I've heard of this show.
Yeah. Everybody knows about this show. So I got an anecdote about Parker Lewis I want to go back to because everybody knows Will Smith. But two of those characters in that intro, one of them is the principal, Miss Musso. And one of them that we saw was her lackey, Frank. And it was only in the first time that I went to Hollywood that I realized that having characters in your show named Musso and Frank was a joke. About that restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up my whole life just thinking that they had normal names. And my mind was blown that first time I went to Hollywood and saw Musso's Musso and Frank's.
You must have had your mind blown when you went down Urkel Boulevard.
That was crazy to me. I didn't realize that was a reference. Did you like The Fresh Prince? Now that this,
I watched it fairly, religiously when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
I probably missed the last couple seasons or something, but other than that, I was all in.
Yeah,
I've gone back and watched a Halloween episode or two in the past 5 years, and probably much like every sitcom from this time period, it is not very funny.
Yeah.
We got some kind of New Kids on the Block style music video going on here. I feel like I'm hanging tough.
Yeah. Hull High.
Hull High. Is it based on the town of Hull, Massachusetts, I'm guessing?
It might be based on that detective Harry Hull,
I don't know.
From that Snowman movie or whatever.
No.
Okay. Yeah, this is super 90s. I have no memory of this, though. It seems like the kind of thing I would have watched.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a slightly more adult Saved by the Bell, 1 year onwards into teenagerdom.
Yeah. Edgy Saved by the Bell.
This could not have run for more than a week, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
All right. The Rodeo Drive, Beverly Hills Hotel. Oh, there's Urkel Boulevard.
Yep. Oh, yeah, 90210. You love to see this kind of stuff.
Interesting. I never would have guessed that this is what the opening credits looked like for this show.
Yeah. Me neither. Is this season one?
Yeah, it must be. These are all debuting shows. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the credits being real saucy when I was a kid.
Yeah. But
maybe that's later.
This seems so old school. These credits look 1985 to me or something.
Yeah.
Oh, is that Mike from Twin Peaks?
I love this show.
You love this show currently, but did you grow up watching this as well?
Well, I loved it as a kid. I don't know if I love this show currently. I'm watching Melrose Place, which I do love, which is a spinoff of
this.
That's
the same thing.
They're very different. Very different shows. Probably not too different, but slightly different. But yeah, I loved this as a kid. I thought it was like, I mean, I was all in. I was like 11 or 12 or something when the show came out, and I was developing crushes on actresses. You know, I was at that age, and I don't know. It was just like fun to watch like kids who are like, you know, supposed to be 5 years older than me have adventures, I guess.
Sure. I get that. Did you have fun watching The Family Man?
I've never heard of The Family Man.
The Family Man looks like some kind of, it looks almost like a Step by Step or something, some kind of a family sitcom.
Yeah. That kid.
Did you watch Matthew Brooks?
I've never heard of him. Did you watch 90210? Did you get caught up in it? It was a phenomenon.
I had the older sister, so, you know, shows like that and Melrose Place were on, and I despised it, you know, because I wanted to be watching something else instead.
Hmm. Well, this Family Man show looks stupid.
Yeah, this looks awful.
I don't like this guy. I don't like his fucking family. They're out here on the rocks in the middle of the ocean. It's dangerous.
These are all primetime shows, and I don't see anything here that's got like a primetime quality to me.
Yeah. This intro's not even like selling it on being a comedy or anything. Like, I mean, what are they doing here?
Is it like a Wonder Years kind of a thing? Is this like a slice of life kind of a show?
I would imagine. But I mean, what kind of slice of life is it? I mean, those guys, they look like they're living in a $4 million house.
Yeah, and the San Fernando Valley, I think. Okay, the show is in stereo. What show is this? Did I miss the title card?
I don't think they said.
Oh, boy. It looks like it was slightly clipped where we're never going to know what show this is.
Well, we can IMDb Claude Brooks and see what he was in. He can't have been in too much.
It looks like maybe a primarily African-American comedy show here.
Yeah. That last lady, Bridget Walsh, she was in a couple of episodes of Angel, the Buffy spinoff. I like her. I'm going to point out all the Angel and Buffy people as we see them. There's probably a lot of them.
So is this a show where like a white woman marries a black man and it's kind of like a some kind of biracial family? Is that the hook here?
Looks like it. Looks like it. Yeah. That would have been pretty pretty interesting for the early 90s.
All right, Uncle Buck, the TV show starring not John Halloween Candy.
Is it Dan Schneider? Oh, no, that's Kevin Meaney. Know. Yeah, that's Kevin Meaney.
Kevin Meaney. Wow, yeah. It is Kevin Meaney. Holy shit. Well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah. You would think as a comedian, if somebody like approached you and they're like, hey, we want you to do the Uncle Buck TV show. We need you to follow the great John Candy. You would think a comedian would be like, no, thanks. That's hard to do. Yeah. I'm good. I'm not going to try that and fail miserably.
Yeah, you would think you would have looked for work on the Ferris Bueller show instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. There sure were a lot of bad movie to TV adaptations.
Yeah. Lots of failures.
All right. What do we got here? This looks like Boston. City of Boston, I believe.
Oh, yeah. That guy, I don't know that guy's name, but he's a Boston guy. I know him.
Oh, he's a comedian or something. It's Lenny Clark.
Yeah. I remember him from the Half Hour Comedy Hour. He always had jokes about Boston.
I can't believe he had a sitcom. I had no idea. And is this pre-Seinfeld or it's like, is this first year of Seinfeld? I guess we'll find out if it's first year. Second year of Seinfeld? I don't know.
But yeah, it might be the second year of Seinfeld.
Crazy that they gave a guy with such a disgusting sounding accent a TV gig like that. All right, The American Dreamer, starring Robert Urich, and also starring America's National Park System.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Carol Kane. Will this opening credit scene show us a lick of footage from the actual show?
I don't think so, no.
Just stock footage with no imagery of the actors whatsoever. I mean, you're telling me that Johnny Galecki's in this, but you got to show me as well.
Yeah. Whoever made these credits should be fired. Like you have to like the whole point of opening credits are like, is to sell somebody on your show in the first 30 seconds so that they don't switch over to another channel. And man, I would be switching over quick.
I'm pretty sure this is the screensaver that Apple TV puts up when I don't touch my remote for too long.
Yeah. I mean, the cast is really good. Jeffrey Tambor's in there, but
yeah. All right. Parenthood.
Yeah. Speaking of failed movie to TV projects.
Starring Ed Begley Jr., who I like. I like Ed Begley Jr. Why not?
Yeah, he's great.
There's an actress in this just named Thora. Is it Thora Birch, perhaps?
Could be.
David R. Kent was in the Parenthood TV show. And Leo D. Dude,
what?
Leo DiCaprio?
Now, that's a good cast. How crazy.
And again, the show is probably completely deleted from, you know, the archives of humanity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you would think if you have Leonardo DiCaprio on your sitcom that you would at least put it on DVD. I mean, maybe it is, I guess, but... Oh, well, Alan Arkish is the producer. Yeah, like just lost to time, pretty much. And it's got like four of the most famous people.
Now, here's a show that people do still talk about, though. Cop Rock.
Yeah.
Famously one of the biggest swings and misses in TV history.
I wonder how that could have happened.
I don't. I'm pretty sure I never saw Cop Rock. I just remember it being a punchline for like Letterman or like The Simpsons or whatever.
Yeah, I just remember people like goofing on it all the time. I don't think I ever watched it.
We got Randy Newman here cranking out a tune. Is he looking at Roger Corman? Who the hell was that?
I think that was Roger Corman. But yeah, for people who don't remember, this was a musical show where cops would sing and dance, and it was fucking stupid. Like, I can't, what a dumb idea.
Yeah, it's very strange.
And it's not even like this was like following a trend where like there was a different show that was a musical that was like a hit or something like that. It's like they were just like, let's try this, like just really out of left field idea. And I mean, God bless them, I guess, for trying. But
I think their big mistake was setting it in modern day. You know, if these were some, you know, cowboy era Texas Rangers busting out into song and dance, that I might believe, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or high schoolers. I mean, I guess the show was a little bit ahead of its time, and that Glee 30 years later was a big hit.
What do we got? Gabrielle's Fire. What, who is that? James Earl Jones? Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. Kind of a spooky close-up of the man. Not very flattering.
This looks like an intense show.
Yeah, they went all out on this editing. Should have got this guy to work on that other one, you know? That just looked like a screensaver.
Yeah. It's
almost more editing than I can handle. I know absolutely nothing about that show, though.
Me neither. I couldn't tell you what it was about.
Still waiting for the show Discovery this, you know, out of this video. Like, usually there's one or two where I'm like, I gotta see this, but so far, not really. What is this, yeah. LA Law?
I think
or
so.
Is it just Law?
I think this is LA Law.
You ever get into LA Law?
No, I never watch this kind of stuff. But yeah, I wonder if
it's Law and Order.
Yeah.
You wonder what?
If our man RWDT09 is like pulling a lot of the shows that like he could find because they were successful shows, like their intros, or if maybe this was just a real banger year. Cause it seems like we've only seen like a few that were like, that we had no idea about. This seemed like total failures, right? Like it seems like a lot of these shows were hits and the ones that weren't were like notable failures so far. So
yeah,
I don't know if
I think this is all 34 shows that debuted on the major networks. I don't think he's doing any kind of, you know, curation in that way.
Okay. Then pretty interesting that so many of these, were either hits or big swings and misses.
Although this one, I don't really recall. Over My Dead Body with a very stylish kind of rotoscoped almost sort of a intro here.
Yeah, it looks like you can't do that on television.
Yeah.
Like that, that kind of thing.
Or it's like that like kind of photo-based animation, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest, this might be the coolest one I've seen so far.
Yeah, I would watch this show.
I'm sure the show itself is probably god-awful, but...
Well, based on the intro, I'd watch it.
Yeah, at least enjoy the intro every week. Over My Dead Body. Interesting. Okay.
Is that guy like a dead guy, I bet? Like a ghost who's come back to help people?
I guess so, yeah.
I would changed.
We're more than halfway through.
I would have changed the channel on this one already. I'm out on this fucking show.
The Trials of Rosie O'Neill. So she's like a trial lawyer, I guess.
Yeah. She helps and these helps down the and out people. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'll work on Skid Row, you know? She's not afraid of it. Oh, Ed Asner will be there. That'll be nice. Who's that guy getting a spooky close-up?
He looks so intense.
Oh, credited as Edward Asner. He's trying to be taken a little more seriously here.
Yeah. Is Ed Asner the guy who, like, said that 9/11 was a hoax or whatever?
Yeah, he said some stuff like that. But he's funny on Mary Tyler Moore, so we all forgive him.
Yeah.
Against the law. Is the 90s, like, the explosion of legal-based dramas as opposed to, like, I feel like maybe cop stuff was already kind of percolating, but now we're getting, like, more legal stuff?
I think so, yeah. That sounds about right. I remember there being tons of cops and, like, lawyer shows and stuff like that around, like, when I was a kid.
It seems weird. Although this show looks bad. People would want to spend so much time in a courtroom when it's, like... I mean, verifiably the most boring place in the world.
Yeah, that is objectively true.
I get why, you know, a TV network would want to shoot something there. It probably costs $0, but people sitting at home and watching this shit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like easy to like dramatize. Like, if you take a court, some sort of court thing, and you condense all 8 weeks of it down to like 45 minutes, it probably seems pretty exciting.
All right. So we've got a show called WIOU, which I guess is a pun, right? That this is some kind of TV channel. I guess, is it a news channel? Wait, is that Harry Truman from Twin Peaks? That can't be.
It might be.
Yeah, that looks like him, I guess. Yeah, it looks like TV news. Kind of a Mary Tyler Moore. I don't know where Edward Asner was when they shot this.
A lot of these people, like, I think were like the 17th lead in movies or other TV shows I've seen. Like, all of these people look familiar to me, but I have no idea who they are.
Yeah. Well, this guy, you know, Dick Van Patten.
Oh, yeah, I know about him. He's in Spaceballs.
Of course. But yeah, everybody else is at least somewhat familiar, but the show is not WIOU. You could have fooled me. I would have thought that was a complete scam. Didn't exist.
Yeah.
What do we got? Could this be ER? No, it's Life Stories.
Life Stories, of course. I would have changed the channel. I don't like this like freeze frame shit.
I would have went back to the other one that was that black and white legal drama thing over this. I mean, this looks awful.
Why was that guy looking at feet so intently?
I don't know. That was some real Tarantino shit, I guess.
Robert Prosky as the storyteller? What kind of show is this?
This looks god awful.
I hate this.
Life Stories. Oh, Playpen magazine being brought in by a nurse? Okay, now I'm back on board.
Yeah, maybe the show's pretty good.
That was completely incongruous with the rest of the opening. What the hell was that? I feel like RWDT09 pulled a trick on us.
Yeah. He's just inserting weird shots like in Fight Club.
Exactly.
Oh, Evening Shade. This was a big hit. I remember people watching this.
Even with the sepia tone intro, people watched this?
Yeah. I would have tuned out. I mean, I guess I did tune out. I've never watched this.
Wow. Burt Reynolds, Mary Lou Henner. That's a pretty good cast.
Yeah, Hal Holbrook's in there.
Holbrook, Jacob Parker, he's in this.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you what the show is about based on this stupid sepia tone intro.
But Ossie Davis. Charles Durning. Speaking of Hi Mom.
Oh, yeah.
It all comes back to Hi Mom in the end. Yeah, this show looks terrible. I guess it was probably a big deal that Burt Reynolds was on a TV show at the time.
Yeah, I think that's like why it was mostly famous.
All right, back in the Big Apple.
Okay. Married people.
Okay.
They're trying to get some of that married with children juice, I guess.
I guess, but it's a little bit too close for comfort, I would say.
Yeah.
What is that, a young David Cronenberg starring in this? Who was that white boy? I don't know. It looks like a Jeffersons kind of a thing, maybe, or...
Yeah.
Kind of.
I like Chris Young, though. He was in PCU and Warlock the Armageddon.
Jane Curtin in Working It Out. Okay, that was quick. That's one of the ones that he couldn't find the full intro for. So that show is just completely gone.
Yeah. How sad.
Yep. All right, we're on the beach in Malibu, I'm guessing. Driving classic cars up the PCH, it looks like.
Yeah. All right. This is all familiar stuff. Not too far from Musso and Frank's.
Hey, speaking of Alan Ruck.
Hey, all right.
This is no joke. This is like a block, one city block away from where he crashed his car.
How strange.
From the Chinese Theater to Ruffalo's Pizza. So in some ways, I guess you could say it all started here. You know, if you are one of the detectives working on that case, you probably got to go all the way back to whatever show this is that I didn't clock the name of.
Yeah.
What is this show?
Is that Styles from Teen Wolf?
I think it is.
What a crazy show.
Well, that's what producer Deborah Oppenheimer was known for.
It's kind of weird that Alan Ruck, if he was going to do a TV show this year, why wouldn't he just do the Ferris Bueller show?
You know that they tried real hard to get him, right? They were throwing him offers. He's like, nah, I got to go do this thing that nobody will ever hear of again.
Yeah. You'd think it'd be the smart move to do the thing with like name recognition, but.
The Farnelli Boys starring Joe Pantoliano?
Yeah, Joey Pants.
I love Joey Panties. How did I never know that he was in a stereotypically Italian sitcom with Chris Maloney? This looks like the kind of show that if I had caught it as a young man, I would have really enjoyed and then tried to explain to people around me that like, no, you got to see this show. It's actually really good. And nobody would believe me. I feel like Wings was that show for me. I was the only kid in school that liked Wings, you know?
I liked Wings when I was a kid.
There's something soothing about that airport terminal.
Yeah. My dad made me watch like all of, like I went to go visit him in Florida one year and he was like, hey, watch all of the like can't miss Thursday night NBC, whatever they called it. And of the four shows, it was like Friends, Seinfeld, Wings and Mad About You. I liked Wings the most for like 2 years. And then I started liking Seinfeld.
You love that Steven Weber, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
So got Howie Mandel in a golf comedy show with Wendy Shaw. What was this called again? I already forgot.
Good Grief, maybe?
Oh yeah, that's what it was. Good Grief. How is that even a golf title?
That's a good point.
It's not a show about Charlie Brown.
No, this show's a big hit with the kids.
Oh, I think I've seen this show.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of episodes.
Get a Life. So that debuted.
Yeah. Kind of wild to see, to go from Good Grief, which looks like the most milquetoast, like nothing of a fucking corporate sitcom, to this groundbreaking nonsense that Chris Elliott would put on TV.
I didn't love the experience of watching this recently as much as I thought I might, But you do really appreciate it when you see it in context here with what else was on TV, where it's like, yeah, this was way ahead of its time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the years since, people have kind of taken what he's done and run with it. And so it hasn't aged wonderfully. But yeah, I mean, next to all this other stuff, it's mind blowing.
Except that this one has aged pretty well. Babes, this might be the best theme song I've ever heard for a TV show.
It's a good theme song. I remember watching this. I liked this show. I liked this lady, Wendy Jo Sperber or whatever her name is. She's in like a lot of culty movies. I think she's in like Stewardess School or something, which we have not done. I know that I think Kevin likes that movie. I think we've been wanting to do it on the show for like a million years, but like, yeah, I don't know. I liked the show as a kid. They were three really? Funny fat ladies.
I never saw it. Looks kind of funny. All right, we've got some kind of a show that's about the senior year of high school.
Is this like a real documentary about?
It's, I don't know. It's framing it like it's a documentary, but I feel like it won't be. I don't know. That'd be kind of groundbreaking if there really was a primetime high school documentary. It looks like a documentary, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it is.
If so, I mean, this is well before The Real World, right? So,
might be like the same year as The Real World. Or no, is this night? You know, no, yeah, 90. This might be a year or two before The Real World.
It's fairly ahead of its time. Yearbook.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
I would watch this. It might be an interesting kind of, you know, nostalgia piece.
Yeah, kind of surprising. This isn't more well known. I mean, unless like maybe it just like super sucked or something, but
it probably did. Probably. So I'm surprised we have. Well, I guess it's. Oh yeah, it would be season two. So Twin Peaks won't be in this.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
This whole time I've been waiting for it. But what is here? The American Chronicles. Now, isn't this the same intro that we saw before, but just in a slightly different format? The one that looked like an Apple TV screensaver.
Yeah.
Looking at national parks footage.
Yeah, in that one, they used all the stock footage like real small on the screen. It didn't take up the whole screen. And here, they're just letting it take up. Created by Mark Frost.
Yeah, what the hell?
That is the Twin Peaks content you've been looking for.
Jesus Christ. Well, he moved on quickly.
Yeah.
Season two's going on. He's already got a show that he's debuting without David Lynch.
Well, yeah. All right. I guess that makes a lot of sense. Mark Frost went on to that show and David Lynch was doing like Wild at Heart during season two. I guess that makes a lot of sense for the quality of season two, that none of the creators were actually working on it.
And then these guys have the nerve to complain that the network's canceling them. Show up for work, guys.
Exactly.
Don't quiet quit on ABC. All right, here's Haywire. I don't know anything about Haywire.
Me neither. We missed America's Funniest Home Videos, which is still on to this very day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had no idea, but I was at the gym the other day, and it was on one of the TVs live.
I guess Law and Order is probably still on, too, right? I'm guessing.
I think so. Yeah, or like one of the spinoffs, maybe. But yeah, I think it's probably still on.
And Haywire is probably still topping the charts, right?
I think so.
It's on the cover of TV Guide this week. And we end with a little card for DEA on Fox. And that's it.
Yep. Well, okay. Seems like a pretty big year for TV. I mean, a lot of those shows are very memorable. So.
Yeah, and they all came out. They all debuted in the fall of 1990. That's something we can't take away from them.
That is true. That's one thing they are all known for, is debuting in the fall of 1990.
It is kind of a shame that they didn't come up with at least one show where a policeman also plays baseball. Could I not have had that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always a classic. You need one of those in every pilot season.
I feel like 1990 on television looks kind of serious. I mean, there were a few comedies in there, but it's a lot of, I don't know, boring, dramatic looking legal dramas and shit like that.
Yeah. It was probably hot at the time. There's probably some show that came out in like 1989 that was like huge. So everyone was just copying it and being like, oh, we need our own lawyer procedural.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to look up that yearbook show. Maybe I'll be able to stream some of that.
Yeah. I'm going to check out that WIOU.
Oh, yeah.
See what's up with that show. I like the news. But,
and you know what? I'll check out that Italian stereotype comedy as well.
Yeah.
The Joey panties.
You don't get enough of those these days where it's just like, here's a family full of stereotypes. Enjoy it. But we have some voicemails.
Mamma mia.
These are from our friends. I didn't tag who was who, so it's kind of a mystery. There's only two of them though, so it's not too much of a mystery. I guess I could guess and it would be 50-50, but whatever. Here's the first one.
Let's go.
Hey, Junk Food Dinner. This is Eddie from New York, making my way through that Midnight Blue box set. A late night access show that actually advertises fake cocaine to sell to men who can trick foxy ladies into fucking them. That's something that actually happened. And also Al Goldstein, editor-in-chief of Screw Magazine, which is featured in the Junk Food Dinner classic, Tough Guys Don't Dance. And he had some words and feelings to express about the great actor, Sean Penn, who's featured in last week's episode, Bad Boys. So here is Al Goldstein on the Midnight Blue box set. Take it away, Al.
Sean Penn, you are a piece of shit. You are a braggart, a lowlife, and a brat. There's nothing good about you. You go around punching out photographers, being insolent, being sullen, being surly. I am sick of Sean Penn stories. I used to be a press photographer, and people like you I would not piss on. Sean Penn, you're a lowlife. And the reason you're probably so prone to violence is you have a little dick that's never hard. I'll fuck your wife, Madonna. Let her see a stiff Jewish cock. Sean Penn, if you don't like it, my office is right here at West 14th Street. Come get me. I'm going to kick your fucking ass, you lowlife piece of shit. Sean Penn, go fuck yourself.
And that's Al Goldstein. Thank you, guys. And enjoy Hi, Mom. Take care.
Well, thank you. I had no idea Al Goldstein hated Sean Penn, so this is a very informative voicemail.
I had no idea that Al Goldstein had such a dirty mouth. This man is producing vulgar content for the airwaves.
I thought he was more wholesome than that.
Yeah, this is borderline indecent.
Mm-hmm. Sean Penn's probably like a douchebag, though, right? He probably sucks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't do that much good in the world in terms of like flying to war-torn countries trying to rescue like children from burning buildings or whatever, unless like you've punched every photographer in LA.
True, yeah. Well, if that's all it takes to get forgiven for punching paparazzis, I'm gonna punch a few next month when I come down to LA.
You should. Yeah, I mean, they're here, right? I mean, it's when in Rome, you know.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Here is the other voicemail, which, using deduction skills, is Tom from Adelaide.
Hey guys, it's Tom from Adelaide. Haven't called in a while, but, always loving your work. Finished listening to your, latest actual Junk Food Dinner episode, and, I'm pretty much half an hour into watching, Bad Boys from 1983. Awesome. You're talking about wanting to see some more Clancy Brown films. I think we know where this is going. I've told you a fucking ton of times. It's Extreme Prejudice. It is the manliest film, all the muscles, all the sweat, all that shit, and Clancy Brown, once again, is awesome. He's in it along with Michael Ironside, Powers Booth, Nick Nolte, the whole lot. And yeah, it kicks ass. I know I'm kind of beating a dead horse with this, but I really think you guys will enjoy it. Okay, take care and keep on rocking, eh? See ya.
Thank you, Tom. We're going to do Extreme Prejudice. We're going to do it, especially now that I know Clancy Brown's in there. We're doing it. It's you just got to keep reminding us. We'll do it.
I mean, look, we've done Cherry Falls. What more do you guys want from us?
Yeah, they said that was impossible, and we did it. So we're going to do this one, too.
Yeah, it will happen eventually. You know what? To be honest, I get the privilege of picking a movie at the end of this show. Could I pick this? Will I take a respite from my own personal journey to the center of the earth? We'll see.
I hope so. It would be a Christmas miracle in early November.
It would be a miracle, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Really miraculous.
Those are the voicemails. If you would like to send us some voicemails, do so at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Or go to facebook.com/junkfooddinner and hit the call now button. Or join us in the Discord, as Tom has done recently. Tom's in the Discord. You can talk to him. He's there. That's the beauty of the Discord. Everybody should join it. So, in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break, during which you can join the Discord or send a voicemail. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Brian De Palma film, Hi Mom. So stick around.
And I think they'll be blowing them up faster than they can build them.
Listen, I make love very well.
This is for, yes, a massage of the, as you see on the box. You see?
Oh.
For those hard to get at places.
I've been watching them. I have all the photographs. I have all the film, the 8mm film. And then I've got this telescope, you see, and I do this. And it's what I call peep art.
Too bad you don't have a lens.
See that cleavage? Huh?
Yeah.
Where are you going to get that? You don't get that in a Fellini film.
You're coming to one of these theaters, you do not go into the men's room.
Be gentle with me.
Oh, I will, Judy, but not now. We've both had a very exhausting evening, and we're both drained. And
well, when?
Would you wait about 25 minutes?
You are a pillar in the system that is oppressing the black people and all the poor people in the world, no matter what color they are.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Avon Street! Avon Street!
Isn't that great?
You know, tragedy is a funny thing.
Welcome back to Junk Food Supper. The movie we're going to be talking about is Hi Mom, our inaugural Brian De Palma here on Junk Food Supper. My favorite director in the whole world. So I've been wanting to do some more of his stuff. I think it's probably been a while since we did any of his stuff in general. But we have done most of his good stuff between this show now and Junk Food Dinner. But anywho, Hi Mom is one of the earliest Brian De Palmas. This came out in, it says 1970 on Letterboxd, but I've also seen that it came out in 1969. I think this is like his third movie, something like that. Maybe like his third real movie. I guess I could look. It is a sequel to a prior film, which is called Greetings, which is weird. I don't think he's ever done any sequels outside of these two. But let's see when this. Yeah, this is very early on. This is his like third real movie, I guess. He did this movie called Murder a la Mod is his first one, which is kind of not even a real movie. And Dionysus in 69 is also not really a real movie. So this is his third movie. All three of his earliest films were with the star Robert De Niro. Kind of cool that they had such a strong collaboration so early on in both of their careers. And in this movie.
Well, especially because I think we all think of De Niro as being a Scorsese guy, but for a period there, he was working with De Palma. He did what, three movies together, maybe?
Yeah, three. The Wedding Party, Hi Mom, and Greetings. Well, Greetings was first, and then The Wedding Party, and then Hi Mom. The Wedding Party is kind of a weird movie. It's, I don't know, I don't really like that one too much. It's a comedy, but it doesn't have the crazy energy that Hi Mom and Greetings have. It's kind of like more straightforward.
And this is all, you know, all these are back when De Palma was still in New York, because I guess he did, he grow up in New Jersey, I think, but he had not yet moved out to Los Angeles.
Yeah, true. Yeah, these are very New York movies. And then I think Get to Know Your Rabbit, which was his first studio movie, is what made him go out to LA. But then I think Sisters is also a New York movie, which came next. But all three of those first movies with De Niro were just put out on like a really good Blu-ray box set, which I didn't buy because it went out of print immediately. But interesting that these guys came up together. And then after these first three movies, they only did one movie together for the rest of De Palma's career, which is kind of crazy. But in this movie, Robert De Niro plays John Rubin, who in the first movie, he's like just kind of a young slacker type who wants to get into making porn movies. And he ends up going, I think at the end of that one, he ends up going to Vietnam. And then in this, he's getting back from Vietnam. And the movie opens with him looking for an apartment in New York. And it's done in sort of like POV found footage style, where he's being shown through this just awful, awful apartment in New York that seems kind of reasonable now. Like the rent was only like $70 or something for this place. It's that I would pay that. I would pay $70 now to live in that place in New York. And I'm sure many people probably pay $7,000 to live in that place in New York. But it's a lot of the stuff in this movie is done in this sort of POV found footage style, because John Rubin always has his camera on him. He tapes and records most everything. He wants this specific apartment, though, because he wants to set up his camera in the window and videotape the people across the way in another big building. And he wants, more specifically, he wants to record them while they're having sex. And then he wants to turn that into porno films. When they show the shot of the apartment across the way, and they do it over the like title card, it turns into like this really cool rear window thing where it shows us everybody and all the little windows, which I think is really cool. And also this movie instantly starts with voyeurism, which is going to be a thing for the next 50 years worth of De Palma movies. So it's cool to see him start that out at such a young age. So John Rubin, Robert De Niro, he wants to make his porno, but he ends up falling in with this group of like this radical black power group who we kind of seen vignettes of throughout the movie. And they're putting on a play that he auditions for, and he auditions to play the role of a cop in this play. And this audition scene, I think, is really interesting because he's auditioning against nobody. So he's kind of just talking to himself, and he's like acting out him, like confronting would-be criminals and stuff. And he does a lot of stuff like, are you looking at me? Are you looking at me?
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's very Travis Bickle.
Yeah, that scene specifically, and then like pretty much from that point on throughout the movie, feels a lot like if Taxi Driver was a comedy. Like,
yeah,
it's a little crazy. I mean, that scene specifically feels almost like parody of Taxi Driver if you've seen Taxi Driver first, and then just a lot of the rest of the movie where he gets into like, you know, these political shenanigans and
well, even early on when he's just trying to like date that one girl.
Oh yeah.
The way that he kind of puts on this like false character when he's talking to her, like it feels very Travis Bickle, you know, like he's trying to show her his image of what he thinks like a, you know, a nice date, you know, a nice night out on the town should be like. And he's kind of, to the audience at least, it's very obvious that he's kind of putting on this false character, you know?
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, that is a lot like that. And then I guess, yeah, just like the weird sex stuff and the porno stuff being involved too. Yeah, there's a lot of parallels with that movie. And so, yeah, so he gets involved with this play, and that leads to this grand sort of climax, although there's like 20 minutes left after the climax. So I don't know that you can call it a climax, but it's like this huge set piece, a set piece that is probably the main thing that this movie's known for. And it's a scene that Quentin Tarantino has called the greatest scene in all of cinema history, where this group gets people to come to their show, these white people, these like affluent liberal white people, and they paint them up with like shoe polish or something. Like they paint their faces black and they want to give them the black experience. And so once they paint their own faces white, and then they paint the white people's faces black. And then once they've done that, they steal from them and they beat them up and they try to do, there's like just crazy chaos. Like it's done in like this found footage-y way.
Well, and like, and they do a rape.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to mention the rape. There is a rape. And so, yeah, the scene goes from being like absurd, like black comedy satire where you're laughing. You're like, oh, that's funny. They're painting them up and ha ha ha. And then, it gets crazy and the tone shifts and it turns into sexual assault. And you're just like, oh my God, this is crazy. What am I looking at? And then De Niro comes in as the cop, and these people don't know if this is part of the show, like, or if they're actually being accosted. And I guess we as an audience don't really know either. And then I guess until Robert De Niro shows up. And so these people think that Robert De Niro, the cop, is going to save them. But he keeps with the bit, and he is a cop who sees quote unquote black people. So he just accosts them even further, and starts calling them the N-word, which is very funny to me. I thought that was very funny.
Well, and I think that is probably maybe the primary reason that Tarantino calls this his favorite movie scene of all time is it's got about 1,000 N-words in it.
That very well could be, but yeah, but just the absurdity of Robert De Niro calling these poor frightened white people with shoe polish on their face the N-word is funny. And then he takes them out of the building, and then he's like, all right, that's the show. And then these white people who were so afraid for their lives 10 seconds ago suddenly start talking about how great the show was and how they're going to recommend it to all their friends. And it's just so funny. It's delightful. And then after that, this movie kind of turns into Fight Club for like 20 minutes, where Robert De Niro just kind of sort of becomes a terrorist with these people, which is kind of interesting. There's a lot of cool people in this movie. Garrett Graham is in this from Phantom of the Paradise and Chud 2.
And you see his Chud too.
You do see his Chud. That scene is very interesting. He was in Greetings as well, but playing a different character. But yeah, we see his penis in one scene because he's naked in his room and he's like painting himself black because he hangs out with the black power group. And everything's painted except for his wiener. And then it cuts away. And I read that originally at the end of that scene, he also paints his wiener, but this movie was going to get an X rating and they made them cut like 2 seconds of him painting his wiener. And I think that movie or that scene in the movie is like so much more impactful if you cut that out. Like it's a real example of like the MPAA, like getting the opposite, because now it like before in the original scene, it's just, he painted his wiener last. Like that's it. Like that's the whole thing. And now it's like, you're wondering, well, why didn't he paint his wiener black? Why did he want a white wiener and a black body? And it's like, now it raises all these questions that were not intended by the movie. And I think it makes it, yeah, just like it becomes the opposite of what the MPAA wanted now, because like you're thinking more about this wiener that was, you know. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
The other thing is, if he did go, you know, whole hog and paint up his entire shaft, you'd barely be able to lay eyes on the thing. You know, it'd be so dark, you'd barely see anything. But as is, you get a nice clean view of that crank.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it would have just, yeah, silhouetted into the background of the shot if everything was black. But yeah, instead, yeah, the MPAA wanted you to see the whole wiener, I guess. But yeah, he's really good in this movie. Garrett Graham is. Paul Bartel shows up for a little bit. The aforementioned Charles Durning shows up. Jennifer Salt, who would go on to be in Sisters in the Gargoyles movie. She's in this. She's really good. She plays like the love interest. Let's see. Oh, most notably, how could I have forgotten? There's a scene where Robert De Niro is at home with Jennifer Salt, who he gets into a relationship with, and she complains to him that they've canceled Peyton Place. Was this your favorite part of the movie, Sean?
I don't even know that I clocked that. And okay, embarrassed to admit that, because I would have went crazy for that.
Yeah, it's like the last 10 minutes of the movie or something. Like, he comes home and he's like, how's your day? And she's like, oh, it was great, except I found out they canceled Peyton Place, so I'm upset. So
I would be too.
Yeah. So that's why we had to do this movie, because it ties into the Bookhouse Boys.
Well, she's going to be even more upset in about 50 years when Mill Creek or whoever refuses to release the final couple seasons of the show on DVD, you know?
Mm-hmm. let's see. Oh, going back to that big set piece, they shot that in one take and it only took an hour to get that scene, which is kind of incredible. I found that in my research. A lot of this is improv. I think they got a lot of improv actors, and I mean, Robert De Niro and Jennifer Salt are clearly improvising a lot of scenes. And I think that there's a lot of scenes where, like, it's very naturalistic, like the way people talk over each other makes it seem very real. And then obviously there are improv actors and everything's shot in this sort of very realistic way. So a lot of times in the movie, I couldn't tell if something was improv or if they were just doing it very naturally scripted, or if even they, like, there are even scenes where it feels like they're doing man on the street stuff, like Sacha Baron Cohen stuff, or like Eric Andre sort of stuff. But something will happen in those scenes. Like, there's one specific scene where it's like the Black Power group is talking to some people. And I didn't know if it was improv or if it was them, if it was actors talking to real people or what was going on. And then in the background, there's just a robbery and somebody gets shot. And it's like, okay, well, I guess it has to be real then. But then that would make, but maybe it makes it even funnier if they staged that and then some of these people weren't actors and they didn't notice that. So it's like, I don't know. There's a lot of like sort of what is real, what isn't, what is, and you're like kind of removed from a lot of these things through like at least three different mediums. You know, you're watching it on your TV, but then it's also coming in through the camera that you're being shown. I don't know. There's a lot of what is real. What am I, you know, what's fake? What am I seeing sort of stuff in this that I like a lot?
A bit of like on-screen text to kind of suggest like the style of like a TV movie of the week or something like this. You know, like there's all these like chyrons on the lower part of the screen, either giving you like the location or some kind of context for what's happened.
Yeah. And there are a couple of times where I think that like they even use text to kind of like gloss over like maybe things that they couldn't film or things that they cut or something. Cause like sometimes they'll just like give you like, you know, now John has sold his video camera and has bought a TV and like you kind of see it in the background. So it's like, yeah, I didn't know if maybe they were just using that sort of stuff to cut around footage they maybe didn't get or something, which I thought was an interesting way to kind of fudge that.
But it also does kind of create that feeling of this whole thing is unreal in a way, you know, that there's all this kind of packaging around it, you know, that suggests like this is a piece of media that you're watching, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think, as De Palma always does, he kind of plays around with that, like being, which is something he gets from Hitchcock, like the kind of being aware that what you being aware, he's being aware of it, and he wants you to be aware of the fact that what you're watching is not real, except for when it sort of seems real. But then he wants to remind you that it's not real. I don't know. It's interesting what he's doing here. Like a lot of the stuff that he would, it's interesting to see De Palma do this in a comedy because he does a lot of this stuff so well in thrillers later that it's, I don't know. It's interesting. It's weird he didn't do more comedies. I mean, he did a couple more, but they sucked. So, yeah, so I love this. I watched this when I was going through my big De Palma awakening a few years ago. And I liked it a lot then. I like it a lot more now. It's just like, you know, like I said, it's sort of fascinating to see a, where like this weird chaotic hippie energy that he had that he didn't, that he would kind of hone into thrillers and stuff later. And then it's also fun to just see him do this comedy, which he didn't really get to do a whole lot. I mean, like a lot of his stuff is funny, but it's, that's not the main focus, but, yeah, I think this is great. I don't know. What do you think about this? I thought that maybe you would enjoy this kind of thing.
Well, you know, I do consider myself to be a pretty big Brian De Palma fan, you know, because I am a reasonable person, you know. of course, I would enjoy his movies, but I never got around to this one. You know, these early ones, I feel like, didn't get a lot of play until maybe recently. People are starting to kind of rediscover them a little bit. But through most of my life, like nobody ever talked about like the pre-Sisters Brian De Palma stuff, like ever. So when you picked this, I was excited, you know, and I did like a lot of the first third of this movie. Like the opening scene with Charles Durning as the landlord showing off the apartment. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, they kind of employ like a lot of jump cuts in there. Like it's kind of like a Jean-Luc Godard sort of approach to the scene. But I love the way that the scene kind of withholds the reveal of Robert De Niro until the very end. And then you get to see him in like the final shot of the scene. I thought that was pretty cool, which I guess was not even really a reveal for the audience in 1970. Like they probably barely knew the guy, but in 2023, like it feels like, oh shit, wow. Like there he is, you know, looking so young and charming, you know, here's our lead. I thought that was a kind of a cool way to start it off.
Yeah, I guess the reveal at the time would have just been for people who had seen Greetings, you know,
and like
were excited to see this character again, I guess, a couple years later. But yeah, now that De Niro is, has revealed himself to be the greatest actor of all time, it's a much bigger reveal.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, there's also the reveal of like the apartment across the way. I love the way that they shot that. You know, as you mentioned, it's definitely a Rear Window reference. But I also got a little bit of Jacques Tati playtime vibes with like the look of the building and the way that he frames it and shoots it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everything after that with Alan Garfield, the porno producer, Mr. Banner, I thought was incredible. You know, I think Alan Garfield is super funny in this. I love how he just disagrees with everything that De Niro says, just kind of by default. There's this line in this where, you know, De Niro tells Alan Garfield that he's been spying on people across the way. And Alan Garfield is just like, you think people don't know that you're watching them? You think I don't know that you're watching people? And it's just like the funniest, like, because it's like De Niro just told you that he's watching people. Of course, you know, but he's just so like obstinate the entire time. Mm-hmm. I really like him in this. Fun fact, speaking of Tarantino, this guy, Alan Garfield, was Tarantino's first acting teacher, which is how he ended up in the movie My Best Friend's Birthday. I think he's like the only famous person in that. Also looks like, sadly, Alan Garfield has left us. He died of COVID in 2020 at age 80 in Los Angeles. So RIP Alan Garfield. But this was an early role for him. I guess he had been in Greetings and Putney Swope before this, but not much else. And he nails it. He might be my favorite part of this whole movie is Alan Garfield. I just think he's super charming. I also like the smuttiness level of this movie. You know, this is a fairly smutty movie for 1970. Pretty early for a movie to center itself in the world of porno. I mean, Deep Throat doesn't come out until 1972. Hustler magazine doesn't come out until 1974. You know, obviously this is way pre home video. And I just thought it was impressive that he centered this movie around that kind of a burgeoning, slice of culture. And it's cool to see these old porno theaters, and there's like a old, like, dirty bookstore in the lobby of one of the porno theaters that looked kind of cool, where they got all these smutty paperbacks like lined up on the shelves, kind of like, you know, videotapes would be, a decade later. And of course, you know, De Niro is great in this. You know, I knew that it would be interesting to see a young De Niro in this, and it, you know, turned out to be true. I feel like, you know, you do kind of feel like he is still maybe figuring out a little bit of like what the De Niro thing is, but it's pretty much there. I mean, he's pretty clearly a very talented actor, like right from the get-go. And surprising, like how much he looks the same over the years. I mean, like 10 years later, he looked pretty much identical to how he looked in this. So that's kind of, it's weird and wild to see him like, you know, this far back in time, but feel like it's the guy that I already knew. You know, feel like it is just kind of like a slightly younger version of Travis Bickle, you know, before like the weight of the city has kind of grinded him down, you know?
It's also interesting to see him do so much improv. Like all the scenes with him and Jennifer Salt, I think they feel improv'd. Like, especially the scene where she's like trying to have sex with him and he's like telling her that story about like his dead ex-girlfriend. Like it might have been scripted, but it feels improv'd. So, I mean, if he's not doing the improv, then he's a very natural actor. So, yeah. Just watching him do that, because like I feel you don't associate De Niro with improv usually, but he's really good at it in this.
Yeah, surprisingly. And charming, you know, like it would be interesting to watch this in a double feature with Taxi Driver, because there are so many of the same qualities to these two characters, but it's weird. It's like there's just a slight turn that you can make where something that is charming in this movie becomes like menacing in Taxi Driver.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like how Adam Sandler plays his normal Adam Sandler character in Punch Drunk Love, but it's portrayed as like serious and ominous in that movie rather than like goofy slapstick. But he's essentially just playing like Happy Gilmore in that movie, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this with Taxi Driver in this movie.
I guess, yeah, I mean, maybe some of it is just how you shoot it, you know, what angles you're using, what kind of music you're putting under it, how you cut it and all this stuff. But I like to think that De Niro himself also was like kind of in control of that tone, at least to some degree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So anyhow, I liked all of this stuff, you know, like especially like the first half of this. I'm having fun, getting a little bit bored because honestly, like about an hour goes by in this movie and the only thing that has happened is De Niro has like met a porno producer, gone on one date with a girl, like not much has really happened. But then we get that black and white student film section of this movie where the race play goes on for way too long. And I did not like it. I mean, I kind of appreciate that it presages those extreme haunt experiences that the kids do these days, you know, where you pay like $200 to have like a juggalo tie you up and slap you around and call you a chicken shit or whatever. But I don't know, man, it's like 15 or 20 minutes long in this movie and it really drags the movie down, especially because it's just really unpleasant to look at. You know, it's not like, you know, in the movie, like the red shoes, they go off and do a ballet for 20 minutes, but that's like, you know, pretty to look at and pleasant. And this, I don't know, it looks bad. It's a one note kind of a thing. I get it by like, you know, minute one, you could have cut it there. You don't need to go on for that long. And honestly, like after that, I was exhausted and felt like completely uninvested in the rest of the movie, you know? So for those remaining 20 minutes when people are complaining about Peyton Place no longer being on TV. I'm barely watching this. I mean, I was trying, but it was not sticking anymore. So yeah, I mean, overall, I feel like this started off pretty promising, kind of fizzles in the middle. And then I really hated that one scene. But overall, it is an interesting curio that I'm glad that I watched. I did have a couple of bits of trivia that I wanted to throw out. The song Be Black Baby that you hear in this, mm-hmm. as a part of that production, is sung by a guy named Grady Tate, who was a jazz drummer and singer who I guess is probably best known for his work on Schoolhouse Rock. But he also played on records with Charles Mingus, Oliver Nelson, Freddie Hubbard, and many of the jazz greats. And he's credited on Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me and Twin Peaks The Return, because he worked with Angelo Badalamenti on those soundtracks. Like, there's even a track called Grady Groove from those soundtracks that is named after him. So for the fans of Grady Tate, he's here. He's represented.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear there are more Twin Peaks references in here.
Yeah. And the other thing was legendary film editor Paul Hirsch, who cut Carrie and Star Wars back to back. I think maybe even like the same year or something he was working on those. He cut this movie, and he also appears on screen in a very rare cameo. I think maybe only one of two times he's ever been on screen. But that said, I didn't really love his editing here. It's very showy. Like, it's a little bit too much, where it feels like De Palma had like this whole box of toys that he's, you know, excited to play with, but just can't put them down. Which I guess, you know, as an exercise in style, this movie is interesting. It's a very interesting movie, and I'm glad that I saw it. I just didn't find the experience very entertaining.
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, it is very chaotic and very hectic. And I do think that De Palma wants to, like, he's playing with weird tones in that big set piece scene. And I do think that there's a long stretch where he wants you to feel unhappy that you're watching the movie. So,
yeah, I mean, it's almost like a August Underground movie in that way.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think that that's the feeling he wants you to have for part of that scene, but then he also wants it to bookend it with laughter and silliness. So it is definitely a big ask in terms of tone and substance for a big stretch of the movie. So I...
Yeah, especially for a dummy like me that can never really get into black comedies. You know what I mean?
That is true. I was thinking that like halfway through this movie, I was like, oh no, Sean doesn't like black comedy. Like, maybe he won't like this after all. Maybe I've failed. But
and you picked a literal black comedy.
One of the blackest comedies you can see.
It's black everywhere except for Garrett Graham's dick.
Mm-hmm. But I do agree that the movie does kind of just need to end after that scene. Because after that, you're like pretty exhausted. Like, I do like the stuff that happens after that. Like I said, it kind of turns into Fight Club, and like there's some funny stuff with Robert De Niro like pretending to have like this normal life, and like he's blowing up laundry, you know, buildings and stuff like this. But it's like, it's just too much at that point. Like, you kind of just want it to end.
So. I also don't know. I mean, on its own, it, you know, it has a message, I guess. But like thematically, what does this have to do with anything? It doesn't tie in with the voyeurism or De Niro's whole, you know, arc. It's just something that he stumbles into, I guess, and has no connection to anything.
I mean, I think it kind of plays into, I mean, it's thematically, it's sort of about, you know, where is the line between like activism and art, like where is that line and how do you go over it? Which I think is something that De Palma does a lot, or, you know, in his movies. I mean, certainly Casualties of War is that. And like, I think that's something that interests him. And then I think it relates to De Niro's character in that he he's sort of a shiftless guy who doesn't know exactly what he wants to do, other than he knows he wants to make art for some sort of reason. And I think when he finds these folks, it just appeals to him that they're making this sort of crazy art.
Yeah. But, all right. Yeah. I could almost see a version of this movie where that stuff plays out like early on, like within the first 20, 30 minutes. And then the audience having time to kind of recover and process it and integrate it into the movie. Maybe that would, I don't know. Or maybe you just don't even do this scene because it's outlandish.
Yeah. It is a little weird. It is. I mean, maybe it's De Palma doing the Hitchcock Psycho thing where the first half of the movie is about one thing and then it just kind of turns on a dime and now suddenly it's about something else. Like, I feel like, yeah, it is sort of abrupt because the movie, you're just following this happy-go-lucky pornographer for half of it, and then all of a sudden you're, you know, in Fight Club, I guess, to keep bringing it back to that, basically. You're just all of a sudden hanging out with urban terrorists. It's a very strange turn.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but I'm glad that it's available. You know, I'm glad that the pixels are out there. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You might like Greetings, because Greetings is a lot more like the first half of this movie. It's sort of like, it's almost like a sketch comedy movie. It's just like a bunch of wacky hippie vignettes. Without a lot of the heaviness.
Yeah, I might like that. I mean, that was my favorite stuff in this movie, so.
Yeah. But what other movies are you looking to see in your life? Maybe next week, perhaps.
Oh, next week?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, next week we're doing Journey to the Center of the Earth, 1989.
Oh.
From Canon Films. I thought I was going to at least get the Ruining Halloween drop out of you.
Thanks for screwing up our Halloween dumb
there
shit.
There you go. Screwing up Halloween, yeah.
I'm on my other computer. Otherwise, I would use that clip of the Green Goblin from Spider-Man saying, you can't do this to me. I can't find it. So well, that's disappointing. You know,
I'm in fact doing it. Yeah, it is a miracle, but it's a different kind of miracle. We're going back. We have to go back.
I'd rather
it's
not
like
go
Jack
back.
From Lost. We have to go back. That's what he says.
How many more of these things do you have, Sean? What are we doing here?
If you can believe it, I think we are almost halfway through.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, this is kind of non sequitur, you know, but I just want you to know that I have seen a lot of Dustin Ferguson movies and I know which ones are the worst ones. Like, I can pinpoint exactly which films are the worst films by the worst director, and they're all readily available on Tubi. So that's
an interesting. Yeah. What strange aside that you would just throw out there, but okay.
Yeah, just kind of apropos of nothing, you know? I mean, sort of a non sequitur. So I just wanted you to know that I know the absolute worst movies ever made.
This will be the seventh out of 15 journeys that we'll make.
Are you serious, Sean?
Yes, I am very serious. You had all of October off. What did you do with your time, if not enjoy it away from these movies?
Why are you doing this to me, Sean? I've given you Brian De Palma and Michael Mann, and I've given you Richard Linklater, and I gave you Cherry Falls, and I gave you John Carpenter, and I watched all of Twin Peaks. I'm watching all of Twin Peaks, Sean. Can you just pick a real movie?
I mean, if you would like, we can jump ahead two entries to 1995's Willy Fogg in Journey to the Center of the Earth. It's a Spanish animated made-for-TV movie.
No, Sean, I don't want that.
Well, you know, I'm still trying to find the one movie that you're really going to love. I'm hoping one of these journeys is going to be your five-star pick.
Maybe the Brendan Fraser one.
No, that's only 8 movies away.
Oh, okay.
Well, a few of them are Canadian.
You know what is Canadian?
What?
the Kevin Smith movie Tusk, a movie that I would love to talk about and watch with you.
That's an interesting aside.
Just, you know, just non-sequitur, just throwing it out there.
Okay. You know? No, so. I mean, if we did the Kathy Ireland Alien from L.A. and we didn't follow it up with the Journey to the Center of the Earth, I mean, come on. What kind of irresponsible film reviewers would we be?
You do have me there. I do really feel compelled to finish out a franchise once we've started it. So that is why at some point we're probably going to have to do the original Hungarian version of Funny Games, because we did the American remake.
Oh no.
So we'll probably have to do the, you know, just to finish that franchise out. Just, you know, that's just a non sequitur that I was just
in Hungary
of.
Where they don't allow fun or games.
Yeah. You know,
my goodness.
All right. Well, yeah, Journey to the Center of the Earth again.
Look forward to that. Yeah. Again.
All right.
Will there be a goose? Gertrude the Goose.
That was the only good character we've gotten out of seven movies so far. So I hope so.
Sort of a fan favorite, Gertrude the Goose.
I don't know that that's true, but I don't know that any of these movies have a lot of fans.
Well, we're making fans. We're turning people on to these movies. I think it's about time that people discussed the mid-90s Spanish animated made-for-TV Willy Frog in the Journey to the Center of the Earth.
All right.
You know that Discotech Media is going to put out a Blu-ray as soon as we review this motherfucker, right?
That's probably true. They do that. Somebody over there is listening to our show.
Yeah. Whenever I complain about the pixel count on a movie, you can be damn sure that, you know, within a 6-month span, it's going to be out in some pristine format, mocking me for choosing to have watched it 6 months before.
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes. That's why I don't like Surf 2 to this very day. I had to watch a VHS rip on YouTube rather than that newish Blu-ray.
Which you can never watch now.
I can't. We've already done it on the show. I can't go back.
No. But what we have not done, the 1989 Journey to the Center of the Earth. You might think that we had, but we hadn't.
Well, all right. All right. What a world. Well, until next week, I guess that wraps it up. We're going to take a week-long break. Find us on Facebook in the meantime. Find us in the Discord. Let Sean know if he's doing the right thing here, if he's picking the right movies. Let us know by sending a voicemail in, 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-777. I don't know the number. Just go to facebook.com/junkfooddinner and hit the call now button.
Or go to junkfooddinner.com and look for the phone number on the left side.
Yeah, that also works. I think that's everything. I'll go to the Patreon, listen to the Bookhouse Boys podcast. We're at the very end of season 2. And then it's going to get extra weird when we get to season 3. So you got to make sure you're getting in on that if you care anything about David Lynch. So yeah. All right. I think that's everything. This is Parker for Sean saying thanks for having fun.
Oh, I like David Lynch.